Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, October 15th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Hearing Set in Lawsuit Over Ranchland Hills," by Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. A hearing has been set in the lawsuit against Midland ISD and the City of Midland over the future of Ranchland Hills Golf Club. The plaintiffs, Linda Jackson, Jonathan Rojo, and Christy Aldridge, are suing MISD, the city, and its employees, Assistant City Manager Jose Ortiz and Building Manager Jeff Pinkstaff. They say MISD can't go through with its plan to convert the Ranchland Hills property, which it bought in early 2019, as the site of the new Midland High School, because the property itself is not zoned for educational purposes, and because of noncompliance with Midland Stormwater Management Code. The school district and the city were each subpoenaed and ordered to provide responses. MISD's response was filed October 11th. In it, the district argues that the plaintiffs have not pleaded for a waiver of the district's governmental immunity and that the court lacks jurisdiction over their claims. Absent such a waiver, a trial court does not have subject matter jurisdiction over a suit against a governmental body, the response says. MISD pleads and asserts that the plaintiff's claims are barred by governmental immunity, that the plaintiffs lack standing to pursue their claims against the district, that no action by the district has resulted in any physical appropriation of the plaintiff's property, resulted in damage to their property, or has interfered with their use and enjoyment of their properties, and that the plaintiff's claims for damages are precluded by the community damage rule. The city had not filed its response as of late Monday afternoon, according to case records. The next hearing is set for October 21st in the 441st District Court. The Reporter Telegram has learned that Judge William Souter of Lubbock is presiding over the case. Judge Jeff Robnett recused himself due to conflict of interest. This article is entitled "Crisp Crust Bakery Opens in Midland, Brings in Venezuelan and French Pastries," by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. For Karen Reyes, opening Crisp Crust Bakery was a dream come true that was a culmination of her passion for baking and her hard work. Crisp Crust Bakery, a Venezuelan and French bakery, opened its doors to Midlanders on October 5th and offers a variety of croissants, pan dulce, sweetbread, guava bread, cheese bread, Venezuelan ham bread, and more French and Venezuelan baked goods. "I started my business from home when I moved to Midland because of my passion for bakery," Reyes said. "I was doing it for 3 years, and people showed me their love and acceptance and told me that my baking was delicious." Reyes shared that although her passion and inspiration for baking came from her mother, she decided to study pastry baking to complement the knowledge she already had. She wanted to grow professionally and wanted to focus on learning about masas hojaldradas, or laminated French pastries. She trained with Alejandro Guerra, a world-renowned baker who specializes in masas hojaldradas. "I think baking is a way to reach people," Reyes said. "We can give people joy through what they are eating." Reyes was then ready to take the next step, which was opening a brick and mortar. After finding her location, she started working on the interior design and on their menu. "We have 24 different flavors in total," Reyes said. 5 flavors will be offered weekly, and I prepare for the next flavor each week, testing out the pastry's taste, texture, and smell. Reyes said that their pastries are baked fresh each day. She added that they work all night preparing to start baking at 4 a.m. Although their specialty is the laminated pastries, they offer a variety of French and Venezuelan baked goods. Last week's croissant flavors were strawberry cheesecake, biscoff, dark chocolate, almond, coconut, and cookies and cream. Our bakery is named Crisp Crust because I wanted to reflect our pastries, Reyes said. The first bite should feel crunchy, but also feel soft on the inside. The name is supposed to feel like the joy of taking the first bite of a pastry. Reyes said that the bakery has received a warm welcome from Midlanders, with products selling out the first few days they were open. They also plan to add more coffee options to their menu to complement the pastries and are looking for coffee vendors. In addition to expanding their menu, Reyes also wants to expand to another location in the future, saying that they need more space so that people can come in and enjoy their time at the bakery. I put in effort each day to provide quality products, Reyes said. I want to work to be better each day. Reyes said that she loves baking and hopes that her daughters see that with discipline and consistency, they can also pursue anything they are passionate about. I want to thank the community for coming out to my bakery, Reyes said. I feel very blessed and fortunate for everyone who has supported me. I will continue working hard so that everyone that visits will enjoy it. Crisp Crust Bakery is located at 4612 Billingsley Boulevard. Business hours are Tuesdays to Saturdays from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. and Sundays from 2:30 p.m. to 7 p.m. This article is entitled Legacy High Alumni to Hold Scholarship Concert by B. K. Richter, staff writer. Encore, the alumni chorale of Midlands Legacy High School, plans to hold its annual scholarship concert this month. The concert is scheduled for 4 p.m. Sunday at First United Methodist Church, 300 North Main Street. The nonprofit's primary goal with the concert fundraiser is to present an annual music scholarship concert to Permian Basin students interested in pursuing higher education and careers in the music field. These scholarships are funded by donations and awarded to high school senior members of the current LHS chorale, as well as recent graduates currently pursuing music degrees at the college level, according to a press release. Encore also provides an annual opportunity for LHS chorale alumni to return to Midland and sing together under the direction of musical director Paula Edwards. Edwards was the director of LHS choirs from 1990 to 2014. In 2016, Encore held its first concert and reunion. This year marks the 7th performance. The theme of the scholarship concert is a tribute to Henry Sellers. Sellers was the director of the LHS choirs from 1970 to 1974. More than 90 LHS chorale alumni from 1969 to 2021 will be featured. Many of these performers are returning from across the country and even internationally to join the event, the press release said. The concert will also feature several guest artists who are both alumni of the LHS chorale and professional musicians, such as Randall Bass, guest conductor, composer, Fred Green, vocalist, Shelley Irvin Traverse, vocalist, Edward Pleasant, vocalist, and Deborah Seawaw, organist. Guests can also expect a guest appearance by the current Legacy High School chorale under the direction of Cody Duff. The concert is free and open to the public. Donations for the Encore Scholarship are welcome and will be accepted during the performance or can be made online at www.lhsalumnichorale.com/donate.html. LHS Alumni Chorale is a nonprofit organization composed of LHS chorale alumni dedicated to the performance and promotion of choral music within the community. Community National Bank is sponsoring the 2024 Alumni Chorale Concert. This article is entitled Midland College Awards $1.3 Million in Scholarships by Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. Midland College has set a record thanks to the deep generosity of the Midland community. Midland College has awarded more than $1.3 million in scholarships in the fall 2024 semester and is on track to surpass $2.5 million for the 2024-25 academic year, according to a news release. Our scholarship program is a testament to the generosity of our community and our unwavering dedication to student success, MC President Damon Kennedy said. By removing financial barriers, we empower students to achieve their goals, ensuring a brighter future not just for them, but for our entire community. Midland College offers more than 200 scholarships, such as the Legacy Scholarship Program, which is funded by the Abel Hanger Foundation, Scarborough Foundation, Helen Greathouse Charitable Trust, and the Chaparral Foundation. Students who take part in the program receive a full tuition scholarship, leadership training, and philanthropy training. There's also the First Generation Ambassadors Program for students who are the first in their families to attend college. They can receive up to $1,000 in scholarship support. There are currently 15 students enrolled in this program, the college told the Reporter-Telegram. The college has general scholarships available as well as those specific to certain programs. They can be awarded based on financial need, academic performance, and any field of study. Donor-directed scholarships honor the donor's intention by matching funds to deserving students. Each dollar invested in a student has the potential to reshape their entire future, said Meredith Walker, Director of Scholarships. Providing the support students need to achieve their goals is a privilege and a critical part of ensuring their success. Those who would like to support Midland College's endowments, programs, or scholarship funds can contact the Midland College Foundation at 432-685-4526. This article is entitled Midland Sales Tax Collections Surpass Budget by Trevor Hawes, Editorial Director. The City of Midland is already off to a strong start for sales tax collections in the 2024-25 fiscal year. August collections totaled $5.36 million, which was $66,007, or 1.2%, above the budget, according to the City of Midland. The Texas Comptroller reports sales tax revenue about 2 months lagging. The fiscal year runs October 1st to September 30th. Year over year, August 2024 sales tax collections were lower by about 2.75%. The city posted its second largest collection ever last fiscal year at $67.098 million, according to a previous report. Midland collected $2.098 million more than what was budgeted for. Midland Development Corporation, more commonly known as the MDC, collected $1.3 million in sales tax in August. Sales tax within the city is 8.25%, the maximum allowed by the state of Texas. A half cent is split between the Type A sales tax, which funds the MDC, and the Type B sales tax, which goes toward Midland Memorial Hospital. It's broken down as follows. State, 6.25%, City, 1%, County, 0.5%, Type A, MDC, 0.25%, and Type B, Midland Memorial Hospital, 0.25%. This article is entitled, Texas Rangers Renew Search for Caitlin Dennison, Missing Since 2018, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. The Texas Department of Public Safety is seeking information about the 2018 disappearance of 19-year-old Caitlin Dennison of Reno, Nevada. Law enforcement officials say there is a new interest in the case based on recent information gathered by the Texas Rangers. According to a press release distributed Monday, investigators now believe the public may have vital information to help solve this case. On January 9, 2018, Dennison met a male subject, and then together they traveled from Reno to Midland, DPS officials said. The male subject of the investigation is known to have worked as a truck driver within the Permian Basin oil industry. It is also believed that Dennison stayed with the male in his recreational vehicle, which investigators believe may have been parked in West Odessa. The following day, on January 10, 2018, the RV was moved to a location in Midland, south of Interstate 20 and Loop 250, officials said. The day the RV was moved was also one of the last times Dennison spoke to her family and friends. Dennison told her family members she was at the Walmart at 4517 North Midland Drive with the male, but feared for her life. After the Walmart visit, investigators believe Dennison and the male visited Domino's Pizza on Linda Avenue in Odessa, and then went to Rick's Cabaret to find Dennison employment. Investigators said this was the last day Dennison had any contact with any of her family and friends. Investigators remain hopeful someone may have seen something or may have additional information to assist with this investigation. Tips on this case can be submitted online or by phone. Submit a tip online through the Texas Rangers Cold Case website. Contact the Texas Rangers by telephone at 800-346-3243. Investigation will be forwarded to the Texas Rangers assigned to the case. Call Crime Stoppers directly. The Texas Crime Stoppers is offering a cash reward of up to $3,000 to any person who provides information that leads to the arrest of the person or persons responsible for this crime. To be eligible for cash rewards, tipsters must call the Crime Stoppers hotline at 1-800-252-TIPS, 8477. All tips are anonymous, and informants will be provided a tip number instead of using a name. This is the Life Tributes column. Carol Gassiot, September 5, 1937 to October 12, 2024. Carol Jean Noble Gassiot, age 87, of Midland and formerly of Brady/San Antonio, passed away Saturday, October 12th in Midland. Carol was born September 5, 1937 in McAllen, to James Noble and Juanita Martin Noble. She married Ronnie Jean Gassiot on July 30, 1960, in San Antonio. They resided there from 1960 to 1994. After retirement, they moved to Brady in 1994, to San Angelo in 2006, and to Midland in 2018. Graveside services for Carol Gassiot will be at 10 a.m. Tuesday, October 15th at Rest Haven Cemetery in Brady, with Reverend Sheldon Johnson officiating. Friends may view and/or sign Carol's online memorial guestbook at www.leatherwoodmemorialchapels.com. Carol Jean Noble Gassiot is survived by daughter Lori Fleckenstein and husband Ricky of Stanton, brother James Noble and wife Carol Lee of Kyle, Texas, as well as two grandchildren and five great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her parents and husband Ronnie Gassiot. Memorial contributions in memory of Carol Jean Noble Gassiot may be made to the First Methodist Church of Stanton or to Hospice of Midland. Ray Bernal. Ray Bernal, 68, of Odessa, passed from this life surrounded by his family on Friday, October 11th. A viewing will be held on Wednesday, October 16th, from 2 to 8 p.m. A funeral will be held on Thursday, October 17th, at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Interment immediately following in American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Rene V. Sanchez. Rene V. Sanchez, 73, of Odessa, passed from this life on October 1st in Odessa. A viewing will be held on Tuesday, October 15th, from 2 to 8 p.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. A funeral service will be held on Wednesday, October 16th at 10 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home, with burial following immediately in American Heritage Cemetery.
Good morning, this is Kim, and I am reading the Odessa American. Today's date is Tuesday, October 15th. PBS Forum featured council hopefuls. Infrastructure, bond ratings, religion, and social media were the main topics of discussion Monday night. When candidates for Odessa's three city council seats participated in a PBS-sponsored debate, candidates for District 1, District 2, and the at-large position each gave an opening and closing statement and answered questions during 30-minute segments. The candidates remained civil and, with a couple of exceptions, did not attack each other personally. At-large candidates. The debate between at-large candidates incumbent Denise Swanner and Craig Stoker was the most spirited. I often get attacked unfairly by those desperate to seek power again, who happen to be the very same people who got us in this mess we are in terms of infrastructure, water, sewer, and trash, Swanner, reading her opening statement, said. I believe in Christian principles, limited government, low taxes, protection of innocent life, strong borders. My opponent, however, is a Democrat. Stoker, speaking spontaneously, said he wants to give everyone in Odessa a chance to realize their dreams and to make Odessa great. We've got to accept the responsibility and take on the role. As city council, we need to worry about water, sewer, the infrastructure of our roads, public safety, the things that city council should be worried about. We need to leave the other things alone. We have great leaders in Austin, Stoker said. Let's leave the issues of social, national politics to them, and let's worry about the business of the city. Stoker, who is open about being a gay married man, was blunt when he and Swanner were asked their thoughts on civility and campaigning. Stoker said they were all asked to sign a fair campaigning document that says, no personal attacks, go after the issues, go after their platform, stay away from personal, stay away from family, the end. That's what I signed. That's what I meant, and that's what I've done. Can't say the same. I've been attacked personally. I've had friends attacked. Mr. Cal Hendrick and his family have been attacked. The church has been attacked. It's too far, Stoker said. Swanner said social media is the devil's advocate, and she has been trolled over it the last 4 years. We all signed saying that We're going to run a campaign, but we can't control other people's actions, Swanner said. We could go on and on about the social media attacks. They attack all of us unfairly, and at the end of the day, you just have to hang your head high and know what your beliefs are. And I answer to the Lord Jesus Christ, and that's the only one I have to answer to. Stoker and Swanner were also asked if they believe religion should play a role in campaigning. That's a great question. Absolutely, it should play a role. Nowhere does it say separation of church and state. I believe that my moral compass comes to the dais when I make decisions, and I so absolutely believe that that plays a vital role, Swanner said. I believe that God is first. Stoker, who is CEO of Meals on Wheels, said people should be the best living example of the Bible you can be. I tried to do that every day by feeding folks who can't provide for themselves, the homebound elderly, the disabled. I work for the food bank, feeding those who can't provide for themselves. I try to be that living example of the Bible, Stoker said. I work with faith leaders in the community. I work with different churches and pantries to get our mission done at Meals on Wheels. Swanner and Stoker were reminded that City of Odessa lost 2 bond ratings and were asked how they can ensure voters money is used wisely. Swanner said when the audit is finished, the city will have a AAA bond rating. The good news is we are not issuing debt right now, so we don't need that bond rating at all, Swanner said. So that's a positive thing, and so is just moving forward. It's not an issue. Stoker said the loss of the bond rating will stay with the city forever, and if the city does need to borrow money, it will hurt their chances. He attributed the loss to the mass exodus of department heads since December 2022. One of those who left was Assistant City Manager Cindy Muncy, an accountant who played a pivotal role in annual audits and budgeting. Losing the bond rating is not a good thing. You find us losing entire departments. That's attributable to leadership. You had 18 department heads, maybe more, walk out within a period of a year. That's attributable to leadership. Council should be leaders. We should hire leaders who inspire people to work for the city, Stoker said. The firings of City Manager Michael Marrero and City Attorney Natasha Brooks cost the city hundreds of thousands of dollars, and the city could lose far more if former Assistant City Manager Aaron Smith wins his whistleblower lawsuit against the city, Stoker said. Swanner said many of the employees who left didn't want to be scrutinized or didn't like the changes being made. We happily replace those people with good leadership, and we are in a good place with our city manager who has saved the city already millions of dollars, Swanner said. Swanner told voters to do their homework. She and her fellow council members have accomplished much, and a lot of good things are in the pipeline. We stood up for medical practices and personal freedom. We stood up against government overreach, higher ethics and transparency, effective budget. We went to a zero-based budgeting, mineral rights responsible for employment and their budgets, and the list goes on. And we are solving our water issues, she said. Stoker said that if he's elected, he plans to get to work immediately on the city's water, trash, understaffed police department, and pay and morale issues. It's time to make Odessa the place we all know it can be, the place we deserve, the place we want to live, he said. District 2. In his opening statement, District 2 incumbent Steve Thompson noted, There have been some terrible controversies over the last few years, but he feels like he's been the voice of reason for the city. I feel like great strides have been made, but we still have a lot more to do, Thompson said. We are growing very fast, and I'm very proud of the fact that Odessa is finally enjoying some good growth. The 40-year businessman and native Odessan said he's just trying to give back to his community. District 2 candidate Nele Urias told the audience she'd like to use her skills as a business owner to help the city she loves. Taxpayers deserve a council that knows where the money is spent. I decided to stop waiting for somebody to lead and start leading, she said. She said current leadership has been reactive and slow to meet the needs of her district. We need better leadership that will solve the problems that Odessa is facing, she said. I am committed to work as hard as you as I have for my family and my business. When asked about the city's water issues, Thompson said he is proud of the fact the rehabilitation for the city's water treatment plant is almost done. Had the council waited to take the matter to voters like some of his fellow council members wanted, the city would just be starting the project, he said. Thompson also said one of his priorities will be getting a new water storage tank in the northeast. Urias alleged the city has enough money in its coffers to address all of the city's water issues, and Thompson countered it's good for the city to have reserve funds in the event the city does have to seek bonds. Asked about the loss of the bond rating, Thompson said he is the only council member who was screaming about the unfinished audits for the last year and a half, and he's concerned that 2023 audit still isn't done. Urias didn't discuss the bond ratings, but instead said the city needs to come up with a solution to have a better budgeting for our city, to where we can use it and prioritize the attack, the main concerns and the main issues that we have right now. Thompson and Urias were asked how they'd improve Odessa's infrastructure. Urias said that from what she's been reading, the city is already addressing some of the issues, but she wants to make sure there's enough money in the budget for roads, especially on the east side where it's experiencing high growth. Thompson, who pointed out he's on the Permian Basin Metropolitan Planning Organization board, said there are a great many designs in the works for his district, where 5,000 homes, Bass Pro Shops, and the new sports complex are going in. The candidates were also asked what they would do to make sure employees have a voice in what happens in their organization. Thompson, taking a dig at his fellow council members, said it's improper for any elected official to walk into staff meetings because it amounts to intimidation. Our job as a city council is to set policy, not to manage people, he said. Now that's what I understood when I took the job, that my job was to set policies, budgets, and priorities, not to manage people. We have a city manager who does that. Urias confessed to not knowing the city's employee policies, but took the opportunity to criticize the city council for signing 3-year contracts that will allow city manager John Beckmeyer, deputy city manager Gopi Bernal, city attorney Dan Jones, and city secretary Norma Aguilar to walk away at any point with a balance of their salaries. Thompson said the contracts were not properly addressed at the city council meeting when they were voted upon. He also noted that as a businessman, he relies upon his attorneys, whom he trusts to read contracts. The moderators also asked Urias and Thompson how competent they'd be working with council members they might not agree with. Thompson said he's had a lot of practice the last 4 years, but especially since 3 new council members were elected in November 2022. Things got very contentious. They were personal. They were nasty. They were ugly, and there's no place in politics for that. Thompson said, I told my lovely wife, I said, I am not going to fight him. I'm just going to try to get along. I disagree with him. I will vote no, state my reason, and move on. Urias said she wants to be a team player and will try her best to come together in agreement. District 1. District 1 Councilman Mark Mata, who also worked from prepared statements in his opening and closing remarks, told the audience He has a strong desire to see Odessa grow and prosper for future generations, and strides have been made toward that end. Mata said he wants to leave a strong foundation with a strong infrastructure that can support future growth. Working to improve the quality of life for me has been a personal issue. It's been one of my top priorities. He said the sports complex will be a crown jewel of Odessa, and its sales tax revenue will help improve the city's infrastructure along with Bass Pro Shop. He also mentioned improvements to McKinney and Salinas Parks. His opponent, Eddie Mitchell, said nothing has been in District 1 in the 20-plus years he's lived there, and he will focus on beautifying downtown while also addressing the city's water, road, and trash issues. When President Trump comes to Odessa, Texas, he can come up that ugly Grant Street off the interstate. That is one of the ugliest sites for people outside the city. That is just ugly, and I'm pretty sure Trump said something, Mitchell said. He also said he'd like to get more input from city residents when it comes to prioritizing issues. I'm just telling you, folks, if you want something that's going to fight for your downtown, somebody that's going to fight for your downtown, for your District 1, I'm the guy you want, Mitchell said. Mata said there have been some major changes to downtown Odessa and mentioned giving Odessa College land for its green space project. He also said the council just approved a new parking garage that will have space for micro retail spaces. Mata also mentioned money left over from when the council approved certificates of obligation in 2019. We're having First Fridays every month, the first Friday of every month. Those bring people downtown. Mata said, we have $6 million for downtown, and instead of spending that in two blocks, we're spending that throughout the whole downtown, so we can make the whole downtown improve, not just two streets. The pair were asked how they'd improve Odessa's infrastructure. We've got to quit throwing rocks on the streets. We've got to replace those streets sometime. You just can't keep packing and packing and packing. Sooner or later, you're going to have to repave the streets, Mitchell said. In order to do that, Mitchell said the council needs to ask some questions about the current council's decisions. They're cutting all these budgets. Where's the money at? You're cutting people's money. What are you doing with it? We don't see what you're doing with the money, Mitchell said. Mata pointed out that a lot of Odessa streets, including Grant, 2nd Street, and West County Road, are the responsibility of the Texas Department of Transportation. It cost $30 million to widen a two-mile stretch of Fadre Road, Mata said. Sometimes we have to do these little gluing the rocks to the pavement, as he stated, because that's the most effective way to do this and extends the life of those roads by up to 5 years, Mata said. That's just the conversation way to do it, the conservative way to do it. Mata also said that now for the first time the city is receiving paychecks from oil companies for mineral rights that only will be used to fix the city's streets. As for water, Mata said, Pioneer Natural Resources contracts with the city to purchase recycled water has been effective. That has been useful to us. We've used the money to implement new strategies in our water treatment plant. We use that money to help do the first that happened to our day-to-day operations in the city, Mata said. Local drop-off locations to open for Operation Christmas Child. Volunteers are preparing to collect Operation Christmas Child shoebox gifts during National Collection Week, November 18th through 25th. More than 4,700 drop-off locations will open across the country in November, and shoebox packers can find their local drop-off locations nearest them. Since 1993, Operation Christmas Child has been collecting and delivering gift-filled shoeboxes to children, including many who are suffering from war, poverty, disease, and disaster. Operation Christmas Child hopes to reach another 12 million children in 2024 with the hope of Jesus. Shoebox packing is fun for individuals, families, and groups. Find a step-by-step guide on the How to Pack a Shoebox webpage. The project partners with local churches across the globe to deliver these tangible expressions of God's love to children in need. Participants can donate $10 per shoebox gift online through Follow Your Box and receive a tracking label to discover its destination. Children need hope, and they need to know that they are not alone and God loves them. Franklin Graham, president of Samaritan's Purse, said in a news release, "Gift-filled shoeboxes open the door for us to share the hope of the gospel with boys and girls around the world. Please pray that these simple gifts have an eternal impact." Participants can find the nearest drop-off location and hours of operation as they make plans to drop off their shoebox gift. The online lookup tool is searchable by city or zip codes. Signs at each location will identify the drop-off. Operation Christmas Child, a project of Samaritan's Purse, seeks to demonstrate God's love in a tangible way to children in need around the world and together with a local church worldwide to share the good news of Jesus Christ. Since 1993, Operation Christmas Child has collected and delivered more than 220 million gift-filled shoeboxes to children in more than 170 countries and territories. Spoons for Smiles to return October 19th. DQ restaurants in Texas are spreading smiles through a special initiative for Texas kids benefiting Children's Miracle Network hospitals. Spoons for Smiles is set for Saturday, October 19th at participating DQ restaurants in Texas, and participation is easy. Fans simply order a Blizzard treat of any size at their favorite DQ restaurant in Odessa, Midland, and $1 will be donated to Texas Dairy Queen Operators Council to the local member children's hospital for each Blizzard treat purchased, with up to $50,000 donated. Spoons for Smiles is more than just an event. It's a way to make a lasting impact on the lives of Texas children. Lou Romanus, CEO of Texas Dairy Queen Operators Council, "By supporting Children's Miracle Network hospitals, we are helping to ensure that kids across Texas receive the care they need. It's an honor to be part of a community effort that brings joy and hope to so many families." The DQ Fall Blizzard Treat menu is available at participating locations for a limited time and includes the Pumpkin Pie Blizzard Treat, French Silk Pie Blizzard Treat, New Caramel Java Chip Blizzard Treat, Oreo Fudge Blizzard Brownie Blizzard Treat, Reese's Pieces Cookie Dough Blizzard Treat, and the Royal New York Cheesecake Blizzard Treat. Children's Miracle Network hospitals serve kids and their families across Texas, including Nolan and his family, who turned to Christus Children's in San Antonio when Nolan's mom noticed something strange in his eye during playtime. By the end of the week, Nolan was diagnosed with retinoblastoma, a form of cancer that develops in the retina. To remove the tumor in its entirety, Nolan's left eye was surgically removed, and immediately following the surgery, an orbital implant was placed to keep Nolan's eye muscles in shape while he healed. 8 weeks after surgery, Nolan was fitted with a prosthetic eye, his superhero eye, as he calls it. Today, Nolan loves reading and hanging out with his little brother. He enjoys playing basketball, doing karate, and still partial to superheroes. Although Nolan is cancer-free, he enjoys going to his six-month checkup at the big hospital and seeing his friends in the Child Life Zone. Man accused of biting, choking girlfriend. A 24-year-old Odessa man was arrested Saturday afternoon after his girlfriend told police he bit, choked, and squeezed her before ultimately threatening her with a knife. According to an Odessa Police Department report, dispatchers received a 911 call about a disturbance in the 400 block of East 17th Street shortly before noon Saturday. When they arrived, a 24-year-old woman told them she and her boyfriend, Joel Ricardo Lopez Munez, 24, began arguing after she found messages on his phone from an ex-girlfriend, the report stated. During the argument, the woman told Lopez Munez that he grabbed her by the neck and pushed her onto his bed at one point and forced her back inside after she went outside to wait for her mom to pick her up. According to the report, the woman told Lopez Munez that he grabbed her phone, and while fighting over it, he put his arms around her and squeezed. She also said he bit both of her legs and choked her. The woman told the officers that after Lopez Munez's mom and aunt separated the two of them, he grabbed a long, skinny kitchen knife and threatened her with it, prompting his aunt to get on top of her to protect her. The report stated, Lopez Munez's family confirmed he exhibited a knife during the assault, and officers found injuries that were consistent with the woman's story. The report stated, Lopez Munez was booked into the Ector County Jail on suspicion of aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, family violence, a second-degree felony. He was released Monday after posting a $50,000 surety bond. ECISD Special Board Meeting. The Ector County ISD Board of Trustees will have a special meeting at 6 p.m. October 17th in the first floor boardroom of the Administration Building, 802 North Sam Houston Avenue. The agenda includes two Level 3 grievance hearings. There is a time for public comment before the closed session. Celebrate Chamber of Commerce Week with the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce is proud to kick off and celebrate National Chamber Week, which is being held October 14th through 18th. The work of the Chamber helps support and create an environment in which businesses and organizations prosper, a news release said. While the overall mission is to advocate for business, each community's chamber is different in how they go about carrying out that mission. Many chambers focus on social events where people come together to network. This is a very valuable benefit. However, the news release said, the Odessa Chamber has evolved into offering much more than the basic networking opportunities. Since the Odessa Chamber of Commerce was formed 90 years ago, they are involved in every arena of business, advocacy, economic and community prosperity, education, healthcare, transportation, workforce development, leadership, and tourism. The Odessa Chamber promotes local interests to ensure the community has an environment in which businesses and residents can thrive. They also welcome visitors and new residents to our community, showing them the outstanding hospitality of the community. They work to improve quality of life, promoting attractions and a full calendar of activities. Its three departments include members and events, economic development, and Discover Odessa. Odessa Chamber is the voice of business working for more than 1,000 business members representing 44,000 employees. Literary Death Match set for October 17th. Literary Death Match is set for October 17th at the Copper Rose Building, 415 North Grant Avenue. Doors open at 6 p.m. and the event is at 7 p.m. What is Literary Death Match? It's an electrifying night where talented authors go head-to-head in a live storytelling competition judged by a panel of literary experts. Expect fierce performances, creative wordplay, and plenty of surprises. The night wraps up with a final showdown, and only one author will be crowned champion. authors Jeremy Kratz, Richard Santos, Elizabeth Wetmore, and Jonathan Pizarro will face off in a fierce storytelling competition. Judges Becca Oliver, James Wade, 2022 champ, and a mystery judge will be there to make the tough calls. Typewriter Rodeo will also be on hand, and there will be book signings with the authors. The event is aged 18 plus due to language. Get $5 off with codes SAVE at https://www.eventbrite.com/e-literary-death-match-presented-by-odessa-arts-tickets-10133010707. Regular ticket pricing: $15 advance purchase, $20 day of event, $10 Odessa Arts members. Free for UTPB, Odessa College, and Midland College students with valid student ID at the door only. Free tickets if you show your library card at the door. Library cards from Midland, Ector, Big Spring, Andrews, and Monahans.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, October 10th. Texas-sized garage sale returns to Midland for its 35th year. The story was written by Kesley Salinas. The Texas-sized garage sale is back for its 35th year and will open its doors to early bird shoppers on Friday. The annual fundraiser benefits Meals on Wheels and other programs at Senior Life Midland. Quote, "We work all year to organize the Texas-sized garage sale," said Tracy Renton, the Director of Development and Marketing at Senior Life Midland. "We collect items, organize them, clean them, and display them in different departments. We have hundreds of volunteers that are needed to make that happen," end quote. Renton said that the funds raised through the annual garage sale directly funds programs such as Meals on Wheels, which delivers over 10,000 meals each month to homebound seniors in Midland County. Quote, "Volunteers are always needed for Meals on Wheels," Renton said. "We have about 38 routes that we take, and it is important because it allows meals to be delivered to seniors at noon. Sometimes our volunteers are the only people who visit these seniors, so on top of delivering meals, they are delivering hope," end quote. Customers can expect home goods, books, collectibles, clothing, antiques, memorabilia, and much more at this year's Texas-sized garage sale. Quote, "It's like a department store all in one," Renton said. "You never know what you'll find," end quote. She said that the team is good at identifying antiques and upscale collectibles such as specialized china and crystal. Renton added that in the past, customers have found bags and clothing such as Prada, Louis Vuitton, and other designer brands. Quote, "The sale not only benefits our Meals on Wheels program, but it also benefits the community as a whole," Renton said. "You never know when someone is looking for furniture, in need of clothes or other items," end quote. The Texas-sized garage sale is located at 407 East Scarborough Drive. The sale dates are as follows. Friday, October 11th, early bird sale from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Entry fee is $5. Saturday, October 12th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., free entry. Tuesday, October 15th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., free entry. Thursday, October 17th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m., free entry. Saturday, October 19th, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. free entry. MAF's $38 million terminal extension progresses. Vacating of right-of-way approved by council. The story was written by Trevor Hawes. Midland International Air and Spaceport has made a bit of progress on its planned $38 million extension to the terminal building. On Tuesday, City Council approved the vacating of right-of-way so that underground utilities can be moved. The terminal building will be extended south where the flagpoles currently stand. The plan is to move the TSA screening area to this location. The project is currently in the design phase, but when it's done, there will be three screening lanes, including a dedicated pre-check lane with the option to increase to four lanes. Quote, TSA requested about a year ago that another lane be added, Airports Director Justine Ruff told the Reporter-Telegram in September. Quote, the equipment they're currently using is too big. Plus, we're seeing more flights and more people flying, end quote. TSA's equipment has also been on the fritz recently, having gone down twice in September, which led to extended wait times to get through security. When utilities need to be moved to make way for the planned extension south of the terminal building, council members also approved vacating right-of-way north of the terminal as well. Ruff told the Reporter-Telegram before the meeting that there aren't any plans to extend the terminal north, but that moving utilities there now will make it easier in the future if the building grows again. What's that going to be at 4708 North Midkiff Road? The story was written by Kesley Salinas. A specialty lingerie boutique is making its way to Midland. According to its website, Adam and Eve is the most recognized adult boutique brand in the business. The local Midland Adam and Eve franchise is owned and operated by Shauna and Justin Jones. Quote, our franchise is separate from AdamandEve.com, which you might be familiar with, Shauna Jones told the Reporter-Telegram on Wednesday. All the stores in the U.S. are locally and individually owned, end quote. Midland's Adam and Eve specializes in lingerie and adult products. The team is currently working to prepare for their grand opening, which will be announced on their social media pages and website. Quote, we're really excited to be here, Shauna Jones said. We can't wait to open the doors and welcome everyone in, end quote. We sat down with Shauna Jones to get more details about the store. You can read about it in Friday's edition of the Reporter-Telegram. Great Texas Shakeout encourages quake safety. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Earthquakes have rattled the Permian Basin in recent years, including some ranked as among the strongest in the state's history. That may be a good reason to participate in Great Texas Shakeout, part of International Shakeout Day on October 17th. At 10:17 a.m. local time, participants around the world will practice earthquake safety. The Great Texas Shakeout is not only an annual opportunity to practice how to be safer during big earthquakes, but is organized to encourage residents, communities, schools, or organizations to review and update emergency preparedness plans and supplies, and to secure their space in order to prevent damage and injuries. As of Wednesday, 20 have registered for the event in Ector County and 13 in Midland County. Statewide, there are 4,121 Texans registered. In the event of the first jolt of an earthquake or receiving an alert, experts recommend drop, cover, and hold on, or, for those who use canes, wheelchairs, or walkers, lock, cover, and hold on. Lock your wheels if using a wheelchair or walker, if applicable. Drop where you are onto your hands and knees. This position protects you from being knocked down and reduces your chances of being hit by falling or flying objects. Cover your head and neck with one arm and hand. If a sturdy table or desk is nearby, crawl underneath for shelter. If no shelter is nearby, crawl next to an interior wall. Stay on your knees, bend over to protect vital organs. Hold on until the shaking stops. Under shelter, hold on to it with one hand. Be ready to move with your shelter if it shifts. If there is no shelter, hold on to your head and neck with both arms and hands. For those using a cane, the advice is drop, cover, and hold on, or sit on a chair or bed and cover their head and neck. For those using a walker or wheelchair, lock the wheels if possible, get as low as possible, bend over and cover the head and neck with arms, a book, or a pillow, and hold on until the shaking stops. What not to do? Get in a doorway. Experts say this is out-of-date advice that should never have been recommended. They say doorways are no stronger than any other part of a building, do not provide protection from falling or flying objects, and will not be safe in the event of a building collapse. For more information about what to do in the event of an earthquake, including while indoors, outdoors, in a classroom, stadium, or driving, visit shakeout.org.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.